My name is Evelyn Roberts. I'm 87 years old. I have lived here for about 30 years. I'm originally from Cincinnati.
What do you remember about the Depression? Did you know what was going on when you were young?
Oh, yes. I knew what was going on. Of course, when the Wall Street crashed in 1929, that would make me 7 years old. Seven years old. As a kid, kids have more just play and things like that on their mind than what's going on. I can remember that my parents were very upset, but it isn't that it happened overnight, because my father's business had been slowing down for a couple of years. So
what did your father do?
My father had a cafe, and before the Depression, my father had very good business. They had my mother was a very frugal housekeeper, and they managed to save their money, although they were making payments on a house and payments on the business, the building that the business was in. And so when the crash, the banks closed, and of course everybody was upset. Everybody around. I can remember the older people talking about it. You know, they were upset, and we'd have round table discussions. You know, there at the house, and discussing what they could do and how to do things. And the main thing that I can remember is that my father still had his business, and he kept the business open. He only kept the business open because his brother worked with him. And his brother had worked on the railroad and lost his job. He had three children, too. So I know if my dad had closed his business, they wouldn't have had anything. So he kept the business open. He often said he'd have saved money if he could have closed the doors. But he didn't. And of course, being a child, these things weren't rubbing off on me. But I have to admit that I have just keep telling everybody, I never remembered being hungry. I didn't remember not having the clothes that I should have, or shoes. I remember mother saying, seemed like every weekend we had to go up on what she called the avenue, which would be the main street, and buy new shoes for somebody, you know, because we'd outgrown our shoes. And so she never put my shoes on somebody else, because they just don't fit. So they would have to have new shoes. But that's all we did. We walked everywhere we went. My mother did not drive. She did not have a car. There was one car, and my father's business was about a block and a half away from the house. So he walked back and forth from his business. And I remember, though, about every weekend, my father would be out. We would take a drive. These were our pleasures. We would take a drive through the country or through the city, you know, wherever the kids wanted to go. So this was our pleasure, you know. But we had to stay right in the yard. We were not allowed to go anywhere else, and it was a very small yard. But I remember, you know, at that time the Lindbergh baby was kidnapped. Of course, that was a terrible time. And my father became very concerned with his children being out, you know, on the street playing. So he bought a German Shepherd pup. And I remember that I was the one that picked it out, because I was the youngest. And his name was Rhett, and he was a German Shepherd. And when he grew up, he was with us kids outside all the time, constantly. So, of course, he was bought for protection. My father said, somebody, because I've got the doors open on my business, people might think I've got money. He said, which I don't have, but they might think so and kidnap one of his kids. because of the Lindbergh baby being kidnapped and murdered. So it was kind of a trying time. And but like I said, as a kid, these things weren't rubbing off on me like they should. But it's been kind of hard for me to think back on a lot of things for that reason, because I didn't absorb it like a person would that was older, you know. But I don't remember ever seeing a bread line. No problem, no doubt there probably were down in the city. But where I lived, I never came in contact with anything like that. So I didn't, can't tell you anything about it, except that I knew there were a lot of people out of work. There were men that came to the door and asked for something to eat because they were traveling. My mother would usually have them sit down on the porch or someplace and give them a sandwich. And I also remember my mother, a woman coming to the door and asking my mother for money. Because like I said, Dad's business was still going. Doors were open. Not a whole lot of business. But people thought they had some money. So Mother did give that one person that I remember some money. She did. But along with my father keeping my uncle working, he also supported his youngest brother that lived down in West Virginia, and they lived with my grandmother. So he was out of work because he worked on the railroad. The railroad, it was just gone, you know. So he sent money down there. And we went down to visit once a year. And when we went, I just remember this very vividly, my mother and aunt going into Bluefield. And they came home loaded with groceries, perishable things that they could eat right away, and other things that would keep. And they would just be loaded down with one sack after another. That was their big gift to them, you know. And so that I know that was every year when we went. And the children were becoming down there undernourished. They had quite a few children. I remember giving them oranges and how happy they were to get an orange. Now you give a child an orange, they don't want oranges, they want candy. They want something else, fancier, you know. So, but they were happy to have an orange. And I don't know, as time went by, things just seemed to improve. Things kind of let up a little bit, you know. Of course, you heard people, things in the paper and on the radio and things like that. But I just have to tell you this, that we lived in two rooms virtually. Our house was not heated in the winter, except those two rooms. We had a coal furnace that you had to shovel the corn in, the coal in. And, of course, if they would bank, I don't know whether you know what banking is or not, they would bank the fire at night so it would not burn up before morning. And so we would sit in the dining room and listen to the radio. I remember Little Orphan Annie. We'd sit there and listen to Little Orphan Annie. My mother sent away, and she got the code thing that you had to get all the secrets, you know, and everything. So that was quite an occasion. And then we would sit around the dining room table, three of us, and do our homework. And the mother just sat there and listened to the radio. And then when we went to bed in cold beds, and the rooms were cold. In the bathroom, they had an electric heater, and that's where we would dress in the morning. We'd go in that bathroom and dress. All of us would dress in there. And then we were off to school. So, but that I remember, and I don't remember when the house did become heated, because I just don't remember that. But the rooms were never used. The other rooms weren't used except in the summer, you know, when it was warm enough. You could be in there And of course, it was like opening up a new door, you know, for the kids. We just made the most of it. And then, like I said, we played outside. We had to stay at home, pretty close to home. And then I remember we had an old bicycle. Somebody gave us an old bicycle. It didn't have any brakes on it. You couldn't brake it. When you got on it, it was kind of a slope where we lived, you know, on the sidewalk. And you had to drag your feet to stop the bicycle. I remember one time my sister was on the bicycle, and she couldn't get it stopped. And she was hollering at me, "Evelyn, stop me, stop me." I didn't know whether she expected me to jump out in front of the bicycle or not, but I couldn't anyway. Anyway, I don't think anything happened to her. So these were fun times too, you know, but because everybody around us was in the same position. You know, we played all together right in that little circle. And as I got older and things, everything pooped, we used to play ball, baseball out in the street. And of course, we had our little fights and everything. It went on just like kids do, you know. And I don't know. I guess I think everything just gradually improved. Just gradually, it didn't happen overnight. And eventually, I just remember. Of course, then I got into my teens. And I think when I was 16, we moved from that area into a better area of town and a better home, a nicer home. Although the house I was born in is still standing there. It's still standing there, yeah. And I've gone by there and I see how much tiny the yard was and everything, you know. And then my mother used to wonder why she couldn't grow any grass, you know. But we had to stay there and play in the yard.
So which community you moved from?
There were bread lines. People did stand in line to get what food could be passed out. But, I do remember this. When I was old enough, I was probably no more than 10 or 12. In order to save money, my mother would fry the fish at home. I would carry them up to the store, to the cafe. And she would maybe fix a roast or something like that, I would take that up there. I was the one that carried stuff back and forth. And so it was just something I didn't mind, and just something I did. And there was just so much to be done. Of course, my sister and I always helped with the cleaning and everything like that that had to be done. There was no help. You just did it. It wasn't done. And like cutting grass and that sort of thing. We had lawn push mowers, no electric or anything like that, like we have today. It was just done the hard way, yeah. But I do remember my brother Bill having pigeons. And this is a funny thing, like with kids, you know, you're so dumb about things. And they would lay eggs, you know, and have the little ones. And just seemed like as they got a certain size, all of a sudden they disappeared, you know. Of course, my dad would say, "Oh, they were dead in the nest, and I just threw them away." So we found out later that they were little chicks, you know, and they were being eaten. We were probably eating them, and then of course nobody ever told us that. But they were called swabs. That's what they were called. And just like the little Cornish hens are, you know, they were about that size. And I'd always wonder, what happened to them? They couldn't all die. But, you know, you never questioned. And you never said to your mother, "I don't want to do that." Never. And your dad either. Of course, mother was a disciplinarian in the family. And she'd just look at you, you know, or you didn't say it again. The food that was put on the table, you ate it or you didn't eat. And she did not fix something special for everybody. She didn't do it. And she probably couldn't in the first place, and she wouldn't do it. I remember We would buy a pound of hamburger for five people. She put bread and crumbled bread in that hamburger to make it go farther. Yeah, so we would each have at least two burgers. Yeah. And of course, it tasted fine. There was nothing wrong with it. And it was just, she was very, very frugal. They were very frugal. That's the most I can tell you. And it's a lesson that I've learned, and it has stayed with me. And I've tried to pass it on to my daughters in their lives. And I think I have been successful, because my children have been successful. But other than that, of course, I have all kinds of philosophies about what's wrong today, you know. But you can't go back. You can't change all that. You can't do that. So you just go on with the way things are. But other than that...
Do you remember any of the federal programs, the WPA, for instance, or the CCCs?
I remember the CCCs.
Okay.
Because you didn't, a lot of the boys, young boys around there, joined this. And it was good. It was a good thing. And I talked about it just lately to somebody, and I said, it's something we could have today. But now we have driven up through Michigan, and I'll say, those were done by the CCC boys. And I mean, there'd just be a forest of beautiful trees. And that was just close to me, you know. And they were doing that all over the country. And it was a wonderful thing. Now, when, of course, Roosevelt had some wonderful ideas, of course, at that time, people were against it for a lot of the things that he wanted to do because it was just not in the record, you know, that was done. So... But it turned out to be a good thing. And I just keep hoping now that what Obama's doing now, we will turn out to be good. But right now, I have my doubts. But as a lot of people do. But we just keep hoping, like the New Deal and everything, that it would turn out to be a good thing. When my father worked on the railroad as a steward for the railroad, he saw what the unions were doing. They were ruining the country. And when he left the railroad to become a business owner, his whole ideas about things changed. And he said, because he was being a property owner, see, and he was being punished. He felt like he was being punished for things like that. And so... And I suppose he was at that time. I don't know, because he didn't have anything, and they just kept piling more and more on him, probably. Yes, things like that, yes. And, of course, he would feel that way. So his politics would really change then. He became a Republican, yes, because they seemed to be more for the business end of things than labor, yeah. Because labor just, as you remember, maybe you don't, they kind of took over the country, yeah. And they just pressed these. Of course, it was wonderful that they did raise. They did make a lot of good changes. But
when was this time period that you would say labor really had its peak?
Yes, yeah. When did
yeah,
it?
What time period? But that wouldn't happen in the Depression as much. It seemed like people would work for... whatever they could.
Oh, yes, they did then, yes, yeah. But then, of course, the labor stepped in there, yeah, when things began to recover. But it's a sad thing to say, but we didn't really come out of the Depression until we started arming for war. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went to work and was old enough in a defense plant. And that's when I started making pretty good money then.
Can you talk about that? Where exactly were you working?
I worked at Formica Insulation in Cincinnati. It was a dirty place to work, even when you weren't in the factory. It was still a dirty place to work. And the smelly, we had certain clothes we wore, and then just kept them separate from anything else. And then I worked, when I started working there, they put me on a drill press. Well, that wasn't going to work. I wasn't cut out for that. And I was not a Rosie the Riveter. I want to understand that. It was not like that at all. There was a lot of smaller businesses that kept things going. And this, Formica did insulation work for airplanes. And that's what we worked on. Some of them were very small. And so I worked on that for a while. And then they moved me into another job, very insignificant little job. And then someone came along and he said, I've got a better job for you. So they took me down into this place. It was called Pragwood Department. And I like to tell everybody that's where your Formica tabletops and everything started, right there, because they were experimenting. At that time, we made airplane propellers. They were beautiful, beautiful propellers. They were wood, they were wooden. And it was just like a piece of furniture when it was done. So these were experiments. I know later that that's what they were. It had nothing to do with the war effort, nothing at all. So, but I remember I was what they call a schedule and control clerk there. That I could do. And we put these little slivers of wood together, just put a lot of them into this solution. And the Formica in solution's what it was. It smelled terrible. And then they were taken out of there. They had to be a certain temperature, certain dryness, and everything like that. Then they would go into an oven, and they had to come out of there. They had to be just so-so. And then they were put into a big press that just pressed all that together. So you'd come out with a pile of stuff, and you'd come out with something like that. Yeah, that's the way it worked. And, of course, like I said, it just turned out to be beautiful wood. And I wondered at the time, you know, what all they were going to do with that. And then right after the war, Formica tabletops and everything came out. Yeah, so that's where it started. That's where the Formica and named after the factory, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was the start of your tabletops like that. So, of course, there's a lot of other companies now that do this work. I suppose a lot of them are done the same way. I don't know, yeah. But from there, then I worked there for about a year and a half, and I got married. And I went with my husband because he was going to be stationed at Fort Campbell and on what they call the training cadre. And he knew he was going to be in the country for a while yet. So we lived there with him down there for a year and a half. Then he was sent overseas. He was sent over to the Pacific, yeah. Well, you know, we put up with probation, too, at that time, which didn't help anything. It just hurt is what it did. It just hurt some more. And I remember when beer came back in, because my dad served beer. And it was a happy time. It was a very happy time. But I also remember that my parents made homebrew. They made homebrew in their basement. I remember actually working on bottling, on the bottle capper, you know, the thing that you pull down, cap the bottles. Of course, a lot of people make beer nowadays, too. But it's what we did, yeah. He didn't sell it at the store, though. That was for, he wasn't allowed to do that. That was for the house when they had company. We didn't make a lot of it. Just tried. You know, I think it was more of a trial than anything else, yeah. Of course, you know, that's when Dillinger was in there, Bonnie and Clyde and all those people. You would read about them. You'd hear about them and things like
that. What did you think about people like that?
I thought it was terrible, the things they were doing, yes. And I remember when they caught Dillinger, my parents were happy, and I was happy too, yes, when they did, because he'd been killed a lot of people, you know, in his robberies and everything. But you didn't hear a whole lot about it. It's mostly these famous people like that you would hear about on the radio. And maybe there was a lot of robberies going on around where I lived. I don't know. I didn't. And Bonnie and Clyde, I just know that they were bad. They were bad people. and I would see pictures of them, and you think, they're nice-looking people. Why are they like that, you know? But, you know, kids do wonder what makes people do these things. But I think it was, it wasn't so much, there was a lot of people that didn't have anything, but they didn't turn to criminal activities. It was just the poor people that probably would have anyway, you know, been into something anyway, that were doing this, yeah. And I didn't move up here till, my husband came home from the service in 45, almost 46. From Cincinnati, we moved up to, he was drafted into the service right after he graduated from college. And, but he did go to college. Now that's, of course, that's another story. But he went on a athletic scholarship, and he worked his way through college. He worked his way all the way through college. He painted barns. He tore down barns. He did everything he could find to make money to support going to school. And so he was in his first job when we got in the service. And after that, he got another job. In the country, or in Greene County, and that's where we lived for a couple of years. And then we moved back to the city, Cincinnati, and then, I don't know, in 69 is when we moved up here to Hardin County. Of course, he was from Hardin County, yes, but his parents still lived in Hardin County. So it isn't that it was a strange place for us to go, because it was like another second home. So then we built a house over on, when we first moved up here, we lived in a rented home, which burned. And then after that, we built a small home just south of Ada. And from there, when my husband inherited the farm, we moved out to the farm and built a new house there. Yes, that's where I live now. We've been there for 30 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is life like up here for you?
I didn't like it. After being used to the hills, you know, in the city, and seeing the wonderful scenery and everything there, and the river and everything, it was just dry, and you'd see these straggly trees, you know, on the marsh. We lived on the marsh where we rented at first. And these old straggly trees out there on the marsh. And I asked my husband, why did we make this move? And he says, I've often wondered myself, but we did. He got a job. He'd signed a contract. So we were up here. We stayed here. We didn't go back. Yeah. And our house burned, and we built the house. And of course, three children were in school. It kind of got into the community. So you didn't even think about leaving, yeah. And then we, of course, built the house where we're at now, yeah. But at Mount Victory, the only thing I know about this little village is that it's here. And it's an antique place, which I was very interested in. And I have visited the shops many times. I know several people that live in this area, yeah. But as far as knowing anything more about it, I don't, yeah.
Did you ever hear any stories from your husband about growing up here?
Louder, please.
I'm sorry. Did you ever hear stories about growing up here from your husband?
He lived on the farm. He lived on a farm, and he worked on the farm. And where we built the house, it had kind of a lot of significance for him, because it was the field that he used to plow with a horse and plow. Yes. And that was right at that time when those things were going out, you know. And of course, he got older, he went to college, and he would come back and he would work in the summers when he could for his father. But other than that, he got away from the country and the farm, and went to Miami University, got his master's, and we continued on like this, you know. And just actually bettering ourselves all the time, which is what you try to do. When my husband was had a job on the road and he was gone, would be gone all week, naturally you look for something to do with yourself, because I was never one that liked to go running around or anything like that. So I started building furniture. Are you talking about Sue Brown? She's the one who would know more about me. No, you probably don't know her. But I was interested in early American furniture. I built a settle. I built two chairs. I bought a cabinet, a Welsh cupboard, which I have my TV in, which stays in my TV, CD, and everything else is in there. And I love doing it. I just enjoy doing it. And I have one grandchild wanted to build a settle. So I taught her how to make a settle. And then she lives in Philadelphia. She made a chair not too long ago. And so it's kind of rubbed off. But yes, I had a little business for a while. I was working with... Well, to begin with, before that all started, being an early American enthusiast, I started spinning and weaving. And so then we bought sheep. So we'd have our own sheep, and we bought registered Romneys, and we sold breeding stock. But then I had all this wool laying around all the time, and you can just do so much spinning. Although we sold a lot of the wool also, because it's high-grade wool. And then, so I started making little sheep with my hands, you know, just putting them together. And one thing led to another. I started making dolls. I started making all kinds of animals, you know. And I started going to craft shows. And I became quite good at it. And then my youngest daughter... My husband and I, but then all at the same time, I was weaving and making clothes. I wove garments. I didn't make rugs. I made garments, coats, jackets, and things like that. So, of course, I sold those too. And so it was a business, a big business going, and we couldn't keep it. I worked all the time, and I couldn't keep up with it. So finally, we just sold the business to my two older daughters, and they kept it going for years too. Then they gave it up. Now my youngest daughter's doing it. She went out and she did all these craft shows, and she made enough money that she bought a townhouse in Pittsburgh, and it just snowballed, you know. But all because of a little too much wool laying around, you know. And I just started, I guess I was creative, and I just couldn't stop. It just kept going. That's great. So there's a lot of people like that. And these are the entrepreneurs and business that goes, you know, gets going, yeah.
Did your father lose any money in the bank?
Mother said he didn't. He didn't lose a lot. And after a while, you could draw out some, you know. They opened up enough, you could draw out some. So he drew out what he could, and I don't know how much it was or how much he lost. I asked Mother once, and she said it wasn't a lot, because we didn't have a lot in the bank. We were making too many payments. And being the kind of people they were, they didn't put a lot of money in the bank. They kept it at home. They had places where they kept it, yes. And I don't know whether people doing that today or not, probably not. But it had happened then, because being in that generation, they didn't trust banks. You know, they didn't trust them, and rightly so, the way it turned out. They couldn't trust them completely. So I know that's all that saved them. It was all that saved them, yeah. The fact that they had kept some of their money. They hadn't spent everything. Mm-hmm.